council meeting for Tuesday, June 27th, 2017, is in order. Welcome, everyone. Today, we have changes approval of agenda under 2.0. We have one addition to the agenda under 16.5, legal advice, MGA 22-2G. Are there any other changes to the agenda?
Excuse me, what was that changing?
16.5, legal advice, MGA 22-2G, addition to the agenda.
Yep.
A motion to approve the amended agenda would be in order. Moved by Councilor Kelly, seconded by Councilor Fairleigh. Any discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. We will now move to 3.0 presentations, and under 3.1 we have Helping Hands, Debbie Page. Debbie, would you like to come forward to the presentation desk? Right over here. We have seats behind if you'd like, and the microphone will pick you up behind the table.
First of all, good morning, Mr. Mayor, councilors. This is Annalise Parker. She is, should have been added along with my name, but that was probably my fault. And we'd like to thank you for allowing us a few minutes to do our presentation. We are here as members of the Queen's Care Society. And under that, we have formed a volunteer group that Annalise and I have spearheaded called a South Queen's Helping Hands. There is already a North Queen's Helping Hands that has been going for a while. I'm not sure exactly how long. But so we just basically wanted to give you a little information on what Helping Hands is, mainly because we feel as councillors that sometimes you may receive requests from your constituents that we could help out with. So that if you had our information and our cards that, Annalise is going to provide you with, that if you get a telephone call or a request from someone, that you can pass the information along to them, that here's a number that you can call that may be able to help you. So just a brief overview. We're all volunteer-based. Right now, Annalise and I are acting as coordinators. And basically how it works is we have a dedicated telephone line with an answering machine that we check on a daily basis. So if someone has a request, they would call the telephone line, leave a message, we would call them back, make arrangements to do the chore that they need done, if we're able to. So basically on our answering machine, it is leave a message, we will get back to you. If we are able to help you, we will do so. So I'll let Annalise go over a few things that that we have highlighted that we can assist with, but our motto is always ask. If we can help you in any way, we will. If we can't, we'll try to find another avenue for you.
We have business cards. We also have fridge magnets. We've been working with Home Care and VON. They're going to be instrumental in helping us get these into the homes of the seniors. We were also at the Seniors Expo. We gave out a lot of cards there. I've given them to clergy. Clergy are in the homes of seniors. So we're right now really trying hard to get the cards out. We've been published in the Advance and the Lighthouse. And this is how things work. I will tell you, I had a call yesterday, and it was a lady who needed a curtain rod put up. It was a large window. It's in her living room. She couldn't manage it herself. So that just involves me taking her name and her address. I will this morning find a volunteer from my volunteer list and give them the address and what the little task is, and they will go and do that for that person. at the Seniors Expo, it was interesting, one senior said to me, let me tell you how I change my bathroom light bulb. Well, first I stand on a chair, and then I stretch my leg over to the sink, and then I stand on the sink and change the bulb. Well, those, we don't want seniors doing that. So I said, the next time, please call us and we'll have someone change. So tasks that don't seem perhaps like, you know, very difficult to us can be for other people. So that's all that they do. That's the, some of the examples are we run errands, we'll pick up prescriptions, changing light bulbs and batteries, picking up the mail. We're leaving transportation to VON because that's already well in place. And we don't make any promises. We always just say to them, we will do the best that we can. And there may be some times that we can't.
Can't help them, but we'll even try. If we can't help them, maybe try to find someone who can, or point them in the right direction. Mm. So that's basically what we are doing. And like I said, the main thing about coming here today was I know that some of the counselors do receive phone calls about maybe getting a green bin to the end of the driveway. That's something that we can do. You know, if you know someone in your area that struggles to get their garbage down, their green bin down to the end of the road, we can get a volunteer that can do that for them. We'll set it up that they'll go every day that it needs to go, and it will be done for them. And it's a stressor away from them. And I know probably everyone here is familiar with seniors, and they stress about minute things. And the other point that I want to make, too, is sometimes it can just be a companionship call. There are a lot of seniors that are isolated. They don't have family near, or even if they have neighbors, they're not close enough to pop in. So sometimes it may just be, we'll take a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, and just pop in, say, hi, how are you? How are things going? Make sure you're okay. And I know the VON, the Red Cross used to have a service, a telephone service. And I think they're continuing on with the ones they have in place, but they're not. It's being phased out. That basically they were set up that they would call seniors, certain seniors on a regular basis, just to say, hi, how are you? Are you okay? Everything's okay. And, you know, perhaps we may expand and pick up some of the slack. I haven't told you that part yet. of doing the telephone touch just to make sure everything's okay.
I wanted to mention, too, this is already up and running and very successful in Mahone Bay, Aspetagon, New Germany, Caledonia. So now we are South Queens. And we meet monthly with South Shore Helping Hands in Bridgewater. And they're all kinds of very knowledgeable people around that table, from the United Way to the VON to seniors' safety. So we are all together moving in the same direction.
And the last point that I wanted to make was South Queens is a very large geographical area, but we are fortunate that we do have volunteers in place, Port Mattoon Way, down through to West Berlin. So we can, you know, touch just about every area, I think, in between and in local. So that is our presentation for you today, and we'd like to thank you for your time. And we will just leave this information here, and you can just have a look at it.
Feel free to take a card or pass it along to a senior.
Let me ask a question. Have you listed your service locally with 211?
That's our next on our list. We, yeah, June was our startup month, so we've been coming here, and we were at the Seniors Expo.
We're quite fresh.
And we will be working with the new senior safety coordinator and so on and so forth. So we have this to-do list. But it is on the radar, certainly.
So if I may, I'd like to ask councillors if they have any questions or comments they'd like to make. Councillor Fisk?
Debbie, a very interesting presentation. You could add me to your list for Greenfield?
Okay, great. That would be perfect because Greenfield is the no man's land, to be honest with you. Because I didn't mean that derogatory. I meant in geographic location because you have Caledonia on the other side and you have here, so it's very difficult to find a coverage for that area. So I thank you very much for that, and we'll be in touch.
We have application forms.
I can see that you ladies are on the right track.
Thank you.
Very good.
And all volunteers obviously have to do a criminal record check as well. And they'll be wearing lanyards that are clearly
identified.
Identify them. We'll have this logo. They'll have a lanyard with their name on it. So when they arrive at the front door, the senior can identify who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Councilor Kelly?
That was my question. Could you explain how for one to become a volunteer for Helping Hands, how would one go about doing that?
Just let us know. We'll get you an application.
Can I ask the question? It's interesting. Can I ask the question of when we talk about having a criminal check? If you've already had one, does that count, or do you have to go again?
It's for each organization, is our understanding.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it has to be within 6 months. I believe as long as it has the vulnerable sector check completed. I think as long as it's within 6 months, is my understanding,
Councilor Kelly, are you finished with your comments? Deputy Mayor McLeod?
Hello again, ladies. I remember interviewing you for QCCR. That was great. And we'll certainly do some publicity for you on that station.
Okay.
In addition to the little helping hands and all the tasks that you have your volunteers do, you know, I keep thinking about, you're also in a falls preventive mode, like the people that want to do these things themselves may have, you know, there's chances of them falling, hurting themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you have somebody going there that is doing the task for them, that's a falls preventive mm-hmm. kind of situation. So it's really good to have that. You might be helping a lot of people, not only in doing the task, but relieving them of the nervousness of doing these certain things.
And their family.
And the family, absolutely.
And that's just one other point I wanted to make, too, is that if anyone knows, like we're trying to get out to the seniors themselves, but lots of times there are family members that perhaps don't live close by but don't know who to contact to maybe help their family member. So it's we want to get the word to them as well.
Any other councillors? Councillor Phillips?
Great initiative. And it's really exciting to see that other communities have had it and it's working, and that you're well on your way to having it successful here. It's just a little bit about getting the word out, mm-hmm. so we'll certainly help with that. And so is it correct that if I called you, you could put out my green bin?
Not you. All right. We'll screen our calls now.
Great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Councilor Piskin?
The 211 call, do your volunteers all have that card so they can guide that individual to where to call? If there's a situation, for an example, if there's a situation, let's just say a financial situation that they need to discuss.
Oh, do our volunteers aware of 211 for them to call 211?
Are they aware of that 211?
Good question. I'm not sure, but we can make sure that they are aware.
Can I just add to this? I think Councillor Kelly, Heather, if there's a possibility to give a presentation to that group, would you do that?
Yeah, we've spoken before about the 211 mm-hmm. divide talk.
Councilors this morning? Councilor Fancy?
Well, so along with that, if as councilors, we do get to, you wouldn't believe some funny calls we get, the people to help do different things, but it's only on an individual basis because you're a councilor. If we put ourselves on the list, then they would be able to call us on a knowing basis that again, it's just like what I'm trying to say is that all of a sudden if somebody said, well, I got to hang a picture, and so I'm on the list, and they call me, and they say, could you come help me hang a picture? And I'm up in Halifax.
Mm-hmm.
I might be able to go over and help them hang the picture, but I can't. Then I'd say, call 211 or call whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll give you, or we have cards here that you can, there's a couple for each of you that, that has the telephone number on it.
Okay.
And you could just tell them that they can call this number, and they should be able to have someone available to help them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The counselors? Thank you, Debbie and Elise, for your presentation this morning. Very helpful. Good project.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
We will now move on to 3.2, Kestutjik National Park. We have Sophie Borkerman here today. I wonder if Sophie would come forward, please.
I have trouble standing behind a desk when I talk, so I might wander around a little bit. So good morning, Mayor and staff and council, assembled gallery, Richard and crew back there. Hi, Richard. Good to see you this morning. So of course, I've been invited here as the visitor experience manager at Kestutjik National Park and National Historic Site, specifically because we have a very wonderful year happening this year, the centennial celebration of Canada, Canada 150. Parks Canada has been put in the center of those celebrations. None of us have ever seen that in our career. We feel this is an historic moment in Parks Canada to be given that privilege to really be, for Canadians and for visitors from abroad, to have this sense of what Canadian identity is about, with these beautiful landscapes, these significant historical places. So you'll see, for many of you who are probably already driving around with these, you'll see these discovery passes. They're free entry to national parks and national historic sites this year, with the idea of encouraging Canadians to either connect or reconnect with these special places. And boy, is it ever working. It's quite phenomenal what's been going on in Kedji this summer. We've had incredible visitation patterns. Many regional residents who in many cases haven't been to our park in 20 so years are coming back to us. We have people from the city. Our first opening weekend, May long weekend, we had something in the neighborhood of about 80% of those human beings who weren't staying overnight were new visitors to Kedji. So very successful in terms, and in those demographics, they're urbanites, they're new Canadians, so it's really, it's working. So we can only see what's going to come forward this summer, and I'd be more than happy to speak to you again in the fall as to what the results were. So I'd just like to ask a question. I'd love to everyone to be dreadfully honest with the answer. So how many people have been to Kedji? Okay, great. And how many people have been in the last year or two? Okay, so maybe about half of that first number. So that's exactly why we're doing what we're doing. So, and particularly what I want to do today is get you excited and get your constituencies excited about having a visit to Kedji this summer, because we put so much effort in getting it right so people will not only come back this summer, but will come back year after year. In particular, in my discipline, and I come from a background of visitor experience, what we're really interested in doing is creating relevance and meaning. And that's different for everybody. Like for some people that come to Kedji are repeat 80% campers, that's to have the same experience with friends over year after year and to socialize with them. For other people, especially people in their 20s, did anyone hear the debate about 2 years ago when, just before Farley Mowat died, he banded together with Robert Bateman, and the two of them got on CBC, and they were up in arms. They were furious because Parks Canada was putting Wi-Fi in our visitor centers. And they said, that is not what we come to national parks to experience. This is really crazy. This is bringing sort of an urban way of thinking into our national parks. It was a very interesting response. And it's almost typical to what we have created. Many of us, myself being part of this, having started with national parks in 1989, we very much created things that we like to do in these national parks, and not things perhaps thinking about what would be relevant to the next generation. So of course, for young people, if they want to go somewhere, they need to feel connected. And it's not just young people, but people who have busy lives who need to be connected to work when they're on vacation. So it's very important. So through this presentation in the next half hour or so, what I'd like to do is explore some of the ways we're reaching out and really trying to become relevant. And we do that, of course, with our existing visitors, but we're trying to pay attention to trends, not only for regional residents, what they would be interested in doing in Kedji, but what urbanites and a broader landscape of travelers, which obviously have an economic impact on Queens County. So when I first came to Kedji, I'd worked all across the country. I'd worked in the Rockies. I started at Pacific Rim, you know, so very different landscapes. I worked in the Northwest Territories. I've worked all across in Latin America with national parks there. And when I came to Kedji, what I really remarked at, of course, there's beautiful lakes and this sense of, you know, incredible, pristine wilderness. But it's the rivers that do it for me, because I feel like I'm in a Wind in the Willows episode. Like, it's this beautiful pastoral landscape, these wonderful trips that you can do by canoe. And that's how a lot of people think of Kedji. And when I talk to people in Halifax, particularly, I'd say, oh, I work at Kedji. And they say, oh, that's that park that you need expert paddling skills to go to. And I'd say, oh, really? You know, so it's interesting, people's perceptions. So what are the barriers to a visit to Kedji, which could also be what are the barriers to a visit to Queens County? So what I'd like in this next little video, and this might be a little bit challenging here with it. We've got this is so high tech here, that it's a little bit tricky getting in and out of the videos.
I say we should just go down to the lake, and we should light ourselves up. A little fire to keep ourselves warm all night. Oh, look at the stars and talk about life. Oh, but you know, sometimes you just need to get away to see it. Sometimes you just need to step out into the woods, step out into the world. Shut off the noise, shut off the power, shut off the lights, sit in the darkness and stop ignoring.
So we're hoping this video, which was produced in cooperation with Nova Scotia Tourism, will really hit the mark and get people as a motivating factor to want to travel from across the country. Just bear with me and I'll get back into the presentation again. This is really high tech. It's great. I wish we had this at the office. Okay. So for many of you, this landscape, of course, you know, for those of you who live around Liverpool, particularly, you're attached to the seaside, probably. And I'm not going to speak specifically to the seaside today, but just to let you know as a little teaser, we've got great plans for the future there. So it's, you know, there was a lot of things that happened in 2012 there when we had cuts across the country, but we've got some interesting ideas and we'd like to talk to you about those soon. So an interesting trend in North America, of course, and many of you might be aware, for families, particularly families, it's very interesting. Those of us who were, you know, brought up in the 70s and 60s and maybe even into 80s had this wonderful sort of romantic, you know, the family would get into the wagon, go across the country for 2 weeks and camp and travel. And, you know, that's not a travel pattern anymore for most families. They do short trips, weekend trips. So for a lot of people, the notion of camping and getting all that gear into the car was really foreign to them, and that wasn't passed down to the next generation. So across North America, U.S. as well, we really saw camping statistics really started to plummet, the traditional sort of camping sort of way. And Parks Canada sort of, we collectively scratched our heads across the country is how might we remedy that. So we came up with this national program called Learn to Camp. And KEDGY is having its third season of Learn to Camp. And boy, there's going to be a surprise. I can't tell you what it is, but this year, in terms of a special visitor for Learn to Camp this year. But it's if you can think about how important that is to the federal government, that might give you a hint as to who might be coming. But there's some incredible interest in Learn to Camp. And it's been in a very, very effective program. And I'll show you just why it's so effective. And sorry, just give me a moment here and I will get, oops, I will get out of the technology here and back into our next one. So this will show you essentially why Learn to Camp has been so popular.
This weekend is about giving the opportunity to Canadians and visitors to learn about camping in the outdoors. It's a chance for them to learn in a safe environment how to pitch a tent, how to cook in the outdoors, how to lit a fire, how to enjoy what nature has to offer to them.
Here we got folks from all over the world. There's a family here visiting from China. We've got some folks who have moved here from India and the Philippines. A couple of folks who are visiting from the UK. All come here to KEDGY National Park to see what this program has to offer. And there's so much that's going to be covered today.
Well, this weekend we're here to help out with Learn to Camp in Parks Canada. And we're doing a couple clinics. First clinic is going to be?
Well, we're going to do something called Backcountry 101 that kind of teaches people how to get their gear ready and how to get outside and into the backcountry. And the second one is going to be?
Teaching people how to cook over a campfire, which is so much fun.
One thing you have to be very careful of when you're cooking a fire is not to have too much flame or too much heat.
No, we're going to actually peel off the skin and get you want to get exposed to the flesh of the apple. So what the flesh of the apple is going to do is stick all that cinnamon sugar goodness to it.
What are we going to do right now?
Go canoeing.
We're going canoeing, for sure, on the Mersey River.
Yeah. My opinion, KEDGY is best seen by canoe. There's a couple of hiking trails here which are quite wonderful, but this park, this landscape is really best explored by canoes.
That was so fun.
Oh my God.
That was awesome. And you know what? It's always incredible to me when you watch people get in the canoe for the first time, how quickly they figure it out.
I know. And there's this little guy, Evan, with his dad, and they never canoed. And the dad warned me that Evan might be like a little scared and wouldn't want to canoe. And this, at the end, he wanted to race me.
My favorite part of this weekend was geocaching,
paddling,
campfire,
marshmallow,
canoeing, kayak, I think.
We saw all kinds of birds.
Yeah, a bird that was pooping.
You did see a bird that was pooping.
If you were with one of your friends who'd never camped before, and you were trying to tell them how fun it is, what would you say to them?
Not
very nice, Quincy.
So her comment, relevance, you can't define that for anybody, right? We all find relevance in different ways, and what we remember is something that is this very, can be a very transformative experience for us. For her, it was that interaction with the bird, obviously. But for other people, it might be something like the little boy, Evan, that you saw with the lovely red hair. The backstory to that is he was absolutely phobic about water in a disastrous sort of way. His father approached us and said, "I'm sorry, but my child will not go canoeing." And so the people from A for Adventure that we do this, you know, this in partnership with Martin Equipment Co-op for our Learn to Camp program, they took the canoe, placed it on a picnic table, and put little Evan in it with his paddle, and that's how he started. Then they gradually, very, very slowly moved him towards the river, or sorry, the lake in this particular case. And he all of a sudden, he was canoeing. And, you know, this little child had this transformative experience that changed him for life, you know, and he will be, hopefully, a lifelong paddler, a lifelong lover of Kedji, and that's exactly what we're trying to provide, and that's our mission. We're setting the bar very high for providing these transformative experiences that will attach people to Kedji for the rest of their lives. So recognizing that not everyone is a camper, you know, there's a few boomers in this room and a few grandparents probably in this room today. And for many of you, you don't want to sleep on the ground anymore. It's just quite that simple. So Parks Canada developed what's called an Atentic. It's a cross between a cabin and a tent. So it has mattresses, tables, chairs, all the comforts you would want from home. You simply just have to bring your bedding with you. And this, like our Learn to Camp program, has been so popular. So the bookings, we still have some availability this July and August, sort of in the middle of the week and also in the shoulder seasons, certainly at the fall. But it's proved to be so popular, and it's a wonderful way for people to have a very fun and easy experience. So that's the memory they associate with it. They don't associate with the trauma, perhaps, of having wet tents, their sleeping bag getting wet, etc. So it provides a very safe way for people to camp. It's really been on the mark in terms of trends with visitation. Many of you know that we have an outfitter company in our park, Why Not Outfitters, that operate out of Jake's Landing. And they're, of course, they're wonderful up-and-coming, you know, very invigorated millennial company, and they're very much attaching themselves to new generations and what they're looking for. So they provide all the things like, you know, what we know of as, you know, canoes, kayaks, all the traditional, you know, bicycles, but they also provide a box that you can take and put in an Atentic, one of our rustic cabins or one of our yurts, so you don't have to worry about bringing your stove, your, you know, cooking gear, any of that sort of thing. It's very intuitive. In fact, they even provide sleeping bags and pillows, so if you really want to be lazy or if you're jumping off a plane. So it's very unusual to have that kind of level of provision of gear in an outfitter in a national park in Canada. So we're very, very lucky. But new this season, they're providing stand-up paddles. So the sense of, you probably look at one of these and say, oh my goodness, I've never touched one of those. And I said the same thing myself. And some friends signed me up for a stand-up paddleboard class. And I was a bit dismayed, and I was even more dismayed because I'm a traditional, you know, I'm a traditional canoer and kayaker and so forth. Because it ended up being a stand-up paddle yoga class. So I was a bit horrified. And within 5 minutes, I'd found out what the pivot point was. It's very intuitive. Once you figure out what that is, believe it or not, you can stay upright. And it's a wonderful experience. You feel like a bug on the water because you're like one of the water boatmen with this high-up paddle. And it's quite remarkable. And so Cody's experience, he's experimenting with this summer, backcountry paddling guided trips on a stand-up paddleboard. So very exciting. New trend. He's capitalizing on that. He's at the head of the crest. So it'll be, I think, very evident that we'll see some increased visitation for that in particular. So for those of you who are Kedji lovers and devotees, you will have spent time at Mayor McKedge, and maybe you might have been attached to the fact that we had a canteen there, and there was a beach, and we had lifeguards, and there was all kinds of activity going on. And then we had a personal use fee that came in Parks Canada, and we saw a lot of our regional residents, maybe some of them in this room, who really turned away from us. They were quite annoyed that they had to pay an individualized fee to come to Kedji. It was part of their heritage, you know, part of their back door. So we saw a real decline in visitation. Less people were coming to the canteen, less people were using the beach. Well, I'll tell you, this summer it's a whole other kettle of fish. Because it's Canada 150, we've reinvigorated Mayor McKedge. So you'll see rebuilt benches, an open beach, the change rooms are open, the washrooms are open. The canteen, now run by the Friends of Kedji, is open again this summer. So you'll see a revitalized, and guess what? Robert Bateman and Farley Moage, may you rest in peace, we've got Wi-Fi at Mayor McKedge. So it's going to be an interesting place, especially for people just down the road. You know, for people from Caledonia, you know, they maybe haven't come to the beach in a while. It's a time to get certainly reconnected. So you'll see that open this weekend for sure.
So knowing that we were trying to be as proactive and sort of creative in our thinking as possible, we had one chance to get it right for 2015. So we looked at what we did really well in Kedji and our iconic programs, so such as our petroglyph tours, such as our paddling programs, such as our dark sky programs, our Mi'kmaq interpretation programs, and we're doing more of those this summer. So we're ramping up the possibility for people to be able to go on them, especially if there's some of them that you have to sign up for. We wanted to make sure that we expanded that, and we're taking different approaches. Our dark sky program is so popular that we have a crowding issue, which is a fabulous, you know, conundrum to have. And so we have 200 people coming out to the Dark Sky program. And you know who's coming out to those programs? Not just families, but millennials. And they're driving out from Halifax. They're coming to stay in Kedji. And then they're getting back in their car and driving back again. They are so obsessed with the idea of Dark Sky. So we're expanding our Dark Sky circle. If you've been there where the wonderful sort of ergonomic benches, the big circle, and you sort of lean back and look at the stars with a telescope, to taking it out to Mermakej Beach, to exploring the notion when we think about barriers for why people want to come to a place, for some reason, a lot of people are afraid of the dark, especially if you're from the city. And that can sometimes mean that you're not going to come to a national park for that reason. So we're doing a lot more night hikes, we're exploring a lot of that, and we're doing more audience testing with all of that and seeing what their feedback is to those. So particularly for paddling programs, as I mentioned, a lot of people are perturbed and think you need specific skills to come to Kedji. Well, in actual fact, we have a lot of programs set up. We have not an 8-person canoe, we have an 18-person canoe, and we can take people out in a very relaxed fashion. So our lovely little fellow, Evan, who's phobic of water, there are many, many people who come to this park who are water phobic and being in a water craft. So it's a great opportunity to do it as a family, as a group, you know, a birthday party, you know, a corporate sort of thing. But to be out with that many people in a canoe is quite lovely. So the Mersey River Stillwater Paddle, which we did last summer, interpreters are sort of growing with this idea of new trends. And so for the first time last summer, we charged for that program because we added some special little things. We had heritage chocolate, we had a Mersey River tea and so forth. And the interpreters thought, oh no, we're going to charge for this program and nobody's going to come. It actually tripled our participation. So you charge for something, adds value in people's minds, especially for urbanites who are looking for something interesting and novel to do. So it's a gentle paddle, lovely. Just something that's straight out of Wind of the Willows that I mentioned earlier. The other choice is called Pulling Water, and that takes you out onto Mermakej Lake. And you have the force of 18 people in a canoe paddling. You jettison yourself out into the middle of the lake. It's quite a sight to behold, and it's very active, and it's quite lovely. And lastly, new this season is a very romantic paddle called the Lantern Paddle, where we go out at night, and each boat, including stand-up paddleboards, if that's what people choose to rent, will have a lantern on the end of it. So it'll be a lovely scene up the Mersey River this summer. So if you've been to Kedji, you know of the encampment. That's where a lot of our Mi'kmaq programs, I mean, the Mi'kmaq storyline, because it's a cultural landscape in Kedji, very important to the Mi'kmaq people, it's fluid throughout your experience in Kedji, but particularly at the encampment, that's a lot of where our rich storytelling takes place. So if you've ever met Donna, who, and this is Donna actually right here, she challenges people with, and she says, okay, you're naked, you have no shelter, you have no food, and winter's coming on, how do you survive? And it kind of just goes from there. So she talks about how you put all those elements together. She's very provocative in her thinking, and I think what's really important is these cultural interpreters are cementing the idea of a living culture. It's not history. They're talking about a living culture who is still attached to their stories, their language, and they are still very much, in a contemporary sense, users of this landscape. So it's great to see. Ursula, who's one of the best storytellers in Canada, she's recognized by Parks Canada. She just won a SOBE Award, actually, she was nominated for a SOBE Award as a fine artist. She does her story all in Mi'kmaq, not a single word of English. And so she gets people to do certain things. It's quite remarkable what happens, and actually we've had feedback from people who did a version of that program 20 years ago, she's not that old, 5 years ago, and the children are teenagers now, they still rave about it. It was this incredible way how you can cooperate and communicate and not even know a common language. So it was quite lovely. Of course, Dark Sky, as I mentioned, has been so interesting to see how millennials have really taken to that. We're also having this idea of night hikes again for exposure to the fear of night, where we're going up the Farmlands Trail, if you're familiar with that, where the Rogers family, and you know, there's much rich cultural heritage, not just the Mi'kmaq heritage, but much rich European heritage there. So the Rogers family built a farmstead there. There's still evidence of it. So this summer, they're planting a garden. They're letting people sort of harvest from the garden, take care of the garden in this night hike. And Leslie Rogers, who is a descendant of that family, will be leading it. So very much an essence of place hike. It'll be quite marvelous to see. And two more evening programs that we're doing that can expose you to the idea of being outside in a social context around a campfire. We're doing a version of Midsummer's Night Dream this summer. So it'll be great for theater buffs to come. And our interpreters are going to be exploring some of the creatures that you would see at night in Kedji. And lastly, if you're familiar with the Tent Dwellers book, so the wonderful book which talks about this deep, you know, Liverpool was very much a part of this history, this deep attachment from a hunting perspective across the landscape. So it's a play on the Mi'kmaq guide and sport, so the non-Mi'kmaq person who's the person who's being guided, and they have a dream where there's a revolt role reversal, and one becomes the other, and the sort of mayhem that ensues. So it's quite a lovely program, and I think will be very engaging for audiences this summer. Of course, we have lots of children's programs, and we've really ramped that up this summer. So this is a great opportunity where one of our interpreters scoops out material from the river and kids, and it's very popular with little girls, which is great to see because they're not conditioned to get excited about bugs, but they see what's active and alive in the river systems through these little magnifying glasses. It's quite lovely. We have tantamars happening for kids, bike rodeos, a lot of things that are sort of geared to children and how they would like to react in that landscape, which will be really good for bringing families and certainly for grandparents in this room for bringing your grandchildren. Thinking about growing trends, and this will be sort of, I'm giving you a little taste future forward. We're going to be doing a little sampling of this in the fall. And this is probably unique in Canada when we think about this particular program. It's going to be a Mi'kmaq yoga program. So instead of using the Sanskrit words for the poses, it's going to be using the Mi'kmaq words for the poses, thinking about that rooting of place to the landscape and what Kedji means for the Mi'kmaq people, including singing and drumming. So I think this summer we're going to experiment with on the beach. Next year we'd like to build a floating yoga platform with a shelter over top of it that's bug-free. And I think that will be really unique in Canada, and I think hopefully will draw attention to people wanting to come to visit, particularly for that program. We're also doing an escape room that we're sort of experimenting with this fall. If you know of escape rooms, they're very popular for city dwellers. When they do them over and over again. They get very addicted to them. It's always in a room. So you think, how do you do that in a national park? Well, we haven't quite figured that out. But we think that'll also be, there's one in the States, but there's none in Canada so far. So we think that also will be very unique. So lastly, because I know I've been talking a lot, there's just a couple of last little slides here, and I wanted to share this with you. So this is the idea of when we sort of think, I don't really like that expression, but I'll use it anyway, think outside the box. So think about how we might be relevant to future generations and how we might sort of spread the word. So we approached Boxing Rock. They had a beer called The Darkness, and we said to them, hey, do you want to change the name of your beer? And they said, sure, what should we call it? And they said, Dark is Kedji, you know? So I think, and they were very excited, particularly about having something celebratory for Canada 150. And so you'll see, it was very interesting. We had the launch of the beer on our May long weekend. We had the single highest visitation for any event in Kedji in the history of the park. 605 people showed up for that event. We had a star party with telescopes. It was quite beautiful to see. So again, we're trying to be more relevant to people and see how they can perhaps attach themselves to Kedji. Incidentally, it's actually 50 cents on every case of this beer goes towards the Friends of Kedji for Dark Sky Education. So we're really looking forward to that nest egg at the end of the season to figure out how we might ramp that up, giving the education component, given that it is so popular. I've got visitor guides here for you in addition to if you don't already have your discovery pass with you. And this, in the middle of it, will extol the virtues of our special events. Of course, as anyone who promotes tourism, special events are often ways to bring people in. We're also thinking about our great guided programs that we're doing that will bring people in regularly, but particularly ones that we know, like the Dark Sky program. We're putting on a second one of those in the fall because it's provided so popular with bringing new people to Kedji and new people to the area. Our Savor the Trail program, which is this wonderful thing for regional food vendors, you know, food and alcohol as well, that you sample along a trail in Kedji. We have a 200-person waiting list for it. So we're doing that, of course, again this year. It's proved to be so popular. We're doing a BioBlitz, which is a marvelous opportunity for people to go out with experts into the field and load up on iNaturalist. Again, thinking about new technology and kids who are really plugged into that. So it'll be a wonderful weekend itself. Big Kedji picnic. Mark that on your calendar, the Labor Day weekend on the Saturday. That's really an invitation to our regional residents to come back to us and celebrate with us at the end of the summer. It's taking place at Miramichkej, and if you know anything about the notion of a big picnic, the idea is to get as many people there as possible, right? So I think it'll be a wonderful celebratory event, certainly, as well. And, of course, we have our Learn to Camp program again, so there's a lot of great things happening. Learn to Paddle, so we're spinning off the idea of Learn to and teaching those skills, will also be happening. It's all free, so it's an incredible, including opportunities on stand-up paddleboards, if you'd like to try one of those. So, yeah. So I'm just going to quickly play this very last video, which really speaks to what we're trying to accomplish in Parks Canada, and particularly at Kedji this year, and that idea is the power of transformation to sort of root people to a place to change people's lives in a very, very meaningful way.
We're trying to get the tent set up here. And as you might imagine, it can be complicated if you've never set the tent up before. So we're going to do that. And we're all learning together.
What could be more difficult than being forced to leave your home, not knowing what awaits you or if your family will ever be safe again? These families have seen tremendous challenges, and the goal of this weekend is to give them the space to find peace, to heal, and to connect to their new home. Our national parks represent the best of our land and our people, and we couldn't think of a better place to say, welcome home.
National Park has its own character, it has its own voice, and to really experience Kedji the way that it's meant to be, you gotta be in a canoe.
Canadian. جيت يعني أول مرة باجي على مخيم والحمد لله كان المخيم بجنن وأنا أول مرة كوني باجي على هيك مخيم والمخيم حلو.
مساء الروح. مساء الروح.
Last summer, of course, we had, and that speaks to the video last summer, is we had a lot of participation from people from Syria recently arrived. Like, they just only recently arrived to Canada and spent much time in refugee camps, and yet they all said, yes, we want to go camping, which is quite extraordinary when you think about it. This year, we're increasing our participation from 50 to 100 people, and in amongst those Syrian refugees last year, there were youth from, actually, there was two newly arrived families from Bridgewater, one from Liverpool, people from Halifax. This year, we have more people participation as well from Syria, families from the Congo, a couple of other African countries. And so when we get together around the campfire, we start with Mi'kmaq drumming, and then the Syrian beats start, and then we're looking forward to the Congolese beats this summer. So it's an incredible mixing of cultures. It's a wonderful opportunity. And I just, in my last little two words, I'd just like to say, this summer we're in partnership with North Queens, so we're having a great opportunity working with the Visitor Center in Caledonia, which is a great sort of distribution center for that region, talking about what there is to see and do. So we're sending one of our students, because one of the government pledges this summer was to increase the number of what they're calling green student jobs. So we have a student who's going to be there 3 days a week on four-hour shifts, and we're really looking forward to sort of developing that relationship, interchanging more information. It'll be a great opportunity. And if I were to answer the question, which I'm just going to put forward, like how would Mayor and Council perhaps support Canada 150 this year, I would say certainly support your recreation programs, particularly getting youth and particular programs where you can get those youth to the park to have all these wonderful experiences, like Learn to Paddle, like the ongoing programs. So for those opportunities for busing, I would really urge you to support those, you know, to get people who don't necessarily have transportation, particularly young people and families who might have economic reasons they can't come to the park. I would really encourage you to make that happen. So thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
Any councilors would like to have a comment or a question?
Yeah, it was an awesome presentation. I mean, I went to Keji when I was very, very young, and so young that when I went back for the first time again this year for the May long weekend.
Yes.
So I was there.
Yes.
At the Dark Sky, did the Keji, dark Keji beer.
Oh, you did?
All
okay.
Of that. And
yeah.
One of the reasons why I did go back was because I had two international students living with me this year, and I took them. And we were just having a conversation last night about their favorite parts of you know, being in Canada. And one of them from Japan said it was being in Keji. This was favorite memory was the weekend at Keji. First time they'd ever gone canoeing. So it was the first time they'd ever been camping.
Yeah.
They'd never gone camping before. So they're going to go back. And first time they've ever seen stars like that at the Dark Sky Preserve. So, you know, they'll be going back to Turkey and Japan and telling all of their friends and family about what an exciting time they had at Keji.
Terrific.
So,
that's
yeah.
lovely. Thank you for
yeah.
sharing that.
Excuse me. Amazing presentation, and I think we're all thrilled that Keji is so close, and what you're doing is absolutely amazing. I was trying to keep track of your partnerships that you have, and I lost count very quickly.
I could send you a list.
Well, you don't need to, because I think that you've got it, that partnerships are the way of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And by bringing other people in, we see so many other parks or places that don't move forward and offer these experiences that they're just kind of sitting there in the dust. And they're clearly moving forward and creating experiences that no one else is doing. So hats off to everybody at Keji and for having that vision that it could be, you know, you could have your own beer named after you. I mean, that is just a small part, but excellent presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the guide, and I've been going since I've been 5 years old.
Oh,
so
lovely.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Great.
Lovely to see the changes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deputy Mayor McLeod.
As I reiterate that excellent presentation, it just makes you want to get out there and spread the word.
Great. I'm glad.
And I liked your suggestion about the opportunities to get youth out to Keji, and maybe through the municipality we would be able to really take a serious look at a program to bus them out, because we bus others to Halifax for a special event, you know, for certain events, but we, you know, I would really like to take that on.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting and sincere approach Terrific.
Okay. Councillor Johnson?
Sophie, that's perfect. It fits right in with everything else we're doing in our community. But what about seniors groups and things like that? Is there any focus on that as well?
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked a lot about the youth and what have you.
Well, I think that would be a marvelous idea, that kind of opportunity. We used to have a very active outreach program in Parks Canada in 2012 that sort of went the way of the dodo, unfortunately, where we would do this kind of thing, what I'm doing today. We would go out to, and we just lost that staff in that capacity. So we would go out to seniors. But wouldn't it be great to sort of bring the seniors to us? I had the most incredible conversation with this couple who were in their 80s yesterday. They hadn't been to Kedji in 25 years, and they were seniors. And they were giving me an earful. They were telling me the stuff they love, but the stuff they thought would be really good to make the park more senior friendly. And I really listened to them. Because we're moving into a visitor experience strategy in the fall where we're talking about what we're doing with the seaside, what we're doing about a winter offer in Kedji, and thinking about, you know, baby boomers, is there, we think about accessibility and this notion it has to be a paved trail, but really, what about the strollers, the flip-flops, the people with the canes? And so this idea that a senior might not necessarily have accessibility issues, but they have senior issues. So I think certainly enabling seniors to come by bus would be marvelous for groups to have that kind of opportunity to bring them in. That would be great. Yeah, from all stratas of society. Yeah, for sure.
We'll have more conversation.
Yeah, that's a marvelous idea.
Thank you.
Is Councillor Fancy?
Yes, sir. Very good presentation. My question is, though, as I look at all the things you're doing this summer, it's just marvelous. I mean, it's like, what could you not do there?
Yeah.
My question is about the sustainability, I
yes.
guess.
Yep.
Because it's nice to have a big flash.
Yes.
What's going to be next year? What's going to
mm-hmm.
be this fall?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know the parks have got a bad rap with even like with cutting back and then not having the winter
Absolutely.
Programs and
yep.
things like that, which
yep.
which were really quite good.
Yep.
But is it going to be government coming back say after this say okay we spent all of our money
yep.
and all of a sudden now we're
yep.
going to cut back again and we're going to start and so all of a sudden you have a big 150
yes.
and it's all
yeah.
over with.
Yeah, I love that question. That's a perfect question. And so what we're using, so Jonathan Shepherd, who many of you probably know, the superintendent of the park, when he and I, when we talk to people, what we talk about is 2017 and beyond. So we're really trying to create that idea of sustainability at the park level with our field unit managers across Parks Canada. We've invited people from the national system to come to Kedji this summer to see what's going on because it's kind of unique and there's some interesting things happening. And so this summer, and we don't see any stop to that, we have over almost, I think it's 26 now green student jobs, of which one of those is going and helping out in Caledonia. That program is not going to, in any foreseeable future with the president government, stop. So that's enabled us to do a lot more creative things, certainly. But the rest of it is being run out of our base program. So we have taken within Parks Canada, we did some carry forward and we said, look, we know that, for instance, our front gate is a leaky sieve. So if we staff people there at different times of the season, so we're demonstrating, we demonstrated that the last fall. So we've made a pitch for enhanced capacity, and I promise you, in some capacity, we will have that next season. So we're building that slowly. From the infrastructure point of view, that's an interesting one. So across Canada, we got almost in the neighborhood of $3 billion with the previous government that's been honored by the present government. Sorry, I'm giving you the convoluted history. But that was to support infrastructure, so ailing infrastructure. But what we want to do is get it right for what Parks Canada and where we need to be 50 years from now. So answering your question, we want to make sure that we're responsive to that. So from a staffing point of view, we're not looking at this as a flash in the pan. And we want to carry forward with the great innovative programming that we're doing this summer. Yeah.
Along with the winter program.
Yes.
Is it going to be ramped up for the
Yeah,
winter
so
program?
So as you know, we've been grooming in Kedji the past
okay.
couple of winters. We want to put a business case forward for a sustainable winter program
Good.
That would include staff and so forth. So we're coming up with some creative solutions for that. And much of it is the what we're being told in Parks Canada, if you want to do that sort of thing, fine, then you have to find revenue to do it with. And how we do that is through roofed accommodation. So we sort of, it's this energetic circle that we kind of spin around. So I think we'll have success with that this winter. Yeah.
Councillor Fisk?
An excellent presentation on Kedji.
Thank you.
I've been several trips to Kedji in the past. My background was running a home for special care.
Oh, terrific.
For seniors. And I just want you to know that several trips on a bus to Kedji with staff, with an activity director, and we would meet with a gentleman, his name is Peter Hope.
Oh, yes, Peter, yeah.
Peter.
Yeah, yeah.
He would, we'd meet him at the main gate. He would take us for a whole journey through the park.
Marvelous, yeah.
Give us the, we would see deer, we would see quite a lot of wildlife, turtles, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's been several trips made through the years I was there with seniors in different capacities, and very well done, and they enjoyed their trips.
That's true. Well, we'd
and
love
we,
to see you back.
Picnics were also available there, and we did that, and everything went well.
That's great.
Really enjoyed it.
Terrific. Good to hear. Yeah.
Any other councilors today would like to speak? Or?
Yeah.
Yes, Councilor Phillips.
Saber the Trail.
Yeah.
I've given that list.
Yeah. It actually, it opens, the registration opens, I think, about 2 weeks before it takes place.
Okay.
So follow our social media. We're
okay.
We're the only actually site in our field unit, including the Citadel, et cetera, that has our own Facebook page.
Right.
And I can certainly, like, we'll widely sort of let people know it's coming, so we can let through the, maybe through Richard, or I don't know what the best venue for that would be, but you're trying to get a spot this year?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, excellent. Okay, good. Okay.
Thank you, Sophie. Very interesting presentation.
You're very welcome, Trey.
Kedji Inland and Kedji Seaside are
yes.
very beautiful.
Yeah.
We would certainly encourage everyone to visit.
Thank you so much, yeah. And please take advantage of the stuff at the front if you don't already have it. Thank you.
Okay.